The Drive-Thru is GTM's monthly news episode and is sponsored in part by organizations like HPDEJunkie.com, Hooked on Driving, AmericanMuscle.com, CollectorCarGuide.net, Project Motoring, Garage Style Magazine, and many others. If you are interested in becoming a sponsor of The Drive-Thru, look no further than www.gtmotorsports.org. Click About and then Advertising. Thank you again to everyone that supports Grand Touring Motorsports, our podcast, Break Fix, and all the other services we provide.
Welcome to Drive-Thru episode number 24. This is our monthly recap where we put together a menu of automotive, motorsport, and random car adjacent news. Now, let's pull up the window number one for some automotive news.
Is it really automotive news this month, Brad?
I mean, it's automotive adjacent, car adjacent.
I think we got something special going on, don't you?
Sure.
We are actually celebrating the second anniversary of the Break Fix podcast here in the month of July, and also the eighth anniversary of Grand Touring Motorsports. So this is a great time for us to maybe put aside some of our standard industry news and do some trivia. What do you think, guys?
I think it's great. I mean, who would believe it? We'd be up here 2 years later.
You said yourself, does anybody really care what we have to say?
Apparently some people do.
There's a podcast.
Yeah, it's advertised on the website.
We have a website?
Oh, don't even get me started. Don't even get me started. We have an in-studio audience that continues to grow with us this month, and we're happy to have all of them here. So why don't we play a little trivia while more people log on to the episode? So who wants to get us started? What's the first question we want to ask our in-studio audience?
Okay, so just for clarification, we're asking the audience these questions, right? Because I don't know the answers to them.
I mean, if you don't know, then you could answer as well.
We'll see. Who was our first female guest? And the answer is not Tanya.
Sarah Jessica Parker.
Izzy just scored 10,000 points.
Linda Vaughn.
So this, I'll give a little hint. This goes back to season one. The second hint is Hooked on Driving. And Mike Crutchfield should know the answer to this. That's the third hint.
I was going to say, was it me?
No.
Hooked on Driving.
Well, if you're saying HID, would it be Mona?
So let me rephrase the question. First female featured guest, because we have had like Chrissy and Tanya have been on.
That's correct.
As guest hosts and in your panels and stuff. This woman had her own feature episode.
She has a certain profession.
She does. She works with her hands.
All right. Time's up. The answer is Dr. Laura Melman. Everybody's like, really? Okay. You should listen to more episodes, folks. We're on question number one.
I can't find the podcast. It's fine.
Baby brain.
The Drive-Thru has gone through multiple revisions, thanks to Tanya's constant betterment of this particular story arc on Break Fix. So what was the original name for We Would Be Remiss?
Hot Trash.
Nope. The answer is, would you like fries with that?
You get it? Drive-through? Fries with that?
Bonus question. What was the original name for Lowered Expectations?
Lowered Expectations.
And it was only for like one episode. So we changed it right away. It was called A Side of Golden Nuggets. Terrible, terrible things.
I think we made a wise choice by changing it.
What is Brad's favorite vehicle?
HHR.
That's a good pull. That's a really good pull.
I want to say his Z28 Camaro because that's his handle.
So it's not something I've owned.
It's obviously a Ford Ka.
Sport Ka. It's not the Cybertruck either.
Is it a car that you keep trying to find on used car lots brand new years after?
I was going to say, is it the Charger? Because he's been looking for them for a while.
Have I?
You're always looking for them.
He's looking for 2016 Dodge Darts. That's what he's looking for.
The Dart.
Brand new, untitled.
Do you want to know what Brad's favorite car is? It's also touted as the best handling car of 1984. Does anybody want to take another guess?
I do. Is it Bronco 2?
I didn't think the Bronco 2 was the best handling car of 1984.
That's a very low.
1984 was a hard year, okay?
That's the lowest expectations.
Gold nugget.
Porsche 924.
Oh, the 944.
The answer is the Pontiac Fiero.
Oh.
But with the full Ferrari body kit, right?
Real quick, isn't the Fiero sent to space in Fast and Furious 9?
That is correct.
Okay. I just wanted to be sure.
Full on Fiero. If you're going to go Fiero, you always go full Fiero.
Never go full Fiero.
But, you know, it's funny. We do get attached to certain cars on this show. We had a period where we talked about HHRs constantly. Then it was Aztecs. Then it was the Cross Cabriolet Nissan Murano or whatever.
Best convertible ever.
The Dodge Dart. I mean, it's just been just dumpster fires.
Well, and our biggest guy in a little car, how tall was the tallest panelist?
Oh, do I know this one?
You could guess, because I think Steve is about the same height.
Because I was going to say, I might be married to, I might be sleeping with him. Is it 6'8"?
That is the correct answer. Yes, our tallest driver was 6'8" on the Big Man in a Little Car episode.
But it's not Steve.
It wasn't Steve, but he is 6'8". Okay.
Yeah.
But speaking of Steve's, in the Latin Lads episode, what was Steve's Mini Cooper attacked by?
Lucas.
Water?
It actually got a flood.
All the plagues.
Yeah, it had all the plagues because he had some bug infestation as well.
And it caught fire.
And it caught fire. Not on the day that it flooded.
Locust.
Frogs.
So the answer is a bear. It tried to rip open the back of his Mini Cooper when he was out at some cabin in the woods.
When bears attack.
I still picture it floating in the paddock at some
point. That was amazing.
With those flashers going as it's the back end is way up in the air.
Fun fact, if there is a no feeding the bears law going on and a bear breaks into your car to get food, you will get a feeding the bear ticket.
I did not know that.
Even though you're not willingly feeding them, that's kind of weird.
You're the idiot that left the food in your car.
Exactly.
From the movie Mixed Bag, what celebrity writer co-wrote No Man's Land?
Starring Charlie Sheen and D.B. Sweeney.
Oh, this is the movie with the 9/11 and that Charlie Sheen was a
tool. And no figure skating was in this movie.
But it's not the Charlie Sheen Whoopi Goldberg 9/11 movie where Charlie Sheen's stuck in an elevator and Whoopi Goldberg has a bobblehead of herself. No idea. This is a Steve question.
100% a Steve question. Anybody else want to venture a guess who the writer was? The answer is Dick Wolf of Law and Order.
Yeah.
Dun dun. What did SRO driver Rob Holland do before he got into racing?
He was a competitive cyclist.
That is absolutely correct.
I would have guessed male stripper, but I guess I'm wrong.
He just doesn't talk about that.
Yeah, it's true. That's how he pays for the racing.
Yeah, no, that's how he bought the titanium bicycle parts.
How do you pronounce the name of the first racetrack we interviewed?
Walk out and hit the asphalt, you know, whisper to it or something. How do you interview a racetrack?
I mean, it was the first. We've interviewed several racetracks, but the racetrack organizers and the owners and whatnot. So the very first one we interviewed, they made it a point to correct us on how to pronounce the name of the racetrack.
And we continue to pronounce it incorrectly, just for fun.
On purpose.
Or of Lemons, is it?
No. I know, but I can't think of what it is right now.
I'll give you a hint. It's in Michigan.
Yeah.
It's run by Cheech and Chong.
Nelson Ledges?
No. Waterford.
The answer is Ginger Man Raceway.
Oh, Ginger Man.
See, we all do it.
Yeah. See, I thought the question, when you said pronunciation, I thought you were going to ask, how many times does it take Brad to get the gummy bear pronunciation correct?
That's another trivia question.
It's Ginger Man because it's named after a book, The Ginger Man.
Oh.
And well, they get mad when people call it Gingerman.
Well, if you talk to locals, it's not Waterford. Waterford.
Waterford.
Waterford.
Ginger Man makes it sound like it's a horror film character.
It's Slender Man.
It's the prequel to Slender Man.
Ginger Man.
The red-haired man is coming for you.
Who did Mary Hagee call when she got a flat tire in the desert, allegedly well above speed limit? Who'd she call?
Don't say the Ghostbusters.
Damn it. It would be close, actually.
Bill Murray.
Charlie Sheen?
No. I don't know that Charlie Sheen played this type of person in any of his movies either. More of a Tom Cruise type of.
Here come the.
Will Smith.
So the answer is she called her friend at the CIA. The look of utter disappointment on everybody's face. Nope, she did not call AAA. She called the CIA.
Did they send out a drone to assess where she was at first?
They sent a Reaper. For the first part of this question, we asked 100 people, and they, what was John W. Warner IV's first car?
From the Little Anton crossover episode. Anybody remember? No. His very first car was a De Tomaso Pantera.
Wow.
Now, the bonus question.
Who was his stepmother?
Tanya is raising her hand to answer.
She's a famous legendary actress.
This is true. Diamonds are her best friend.
Betty White.
Elizabeth Taylor.
That is 100% correct. His stepmother was Elizabeth Taylor. Elizabeth Taylor. And he ran an IMSA and a bunch of other series as well back in the day. So
that other series, Eric, that other series.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, that other series. For all of the super fans out there, what was our very first crossover episode? I just pinged him on Instagram today, as a matter of fact. He has a very deep voice.
I don't have Insta.
So it often gets forgotten because we did a whole month of crossovers. Our very first crossover episode was with Blackstone Joe from Slick Talk.
That's right. I was on that episode.
You should know.
What did Carolyn take slight offense to being called on the Tech Transforms episode?
I have a feeling no one on here has listened to the podcast ever.
Is that what it is? Is that what's going on?
She's in IT. So she doesn't like to be called something. Somebody called her sugar tits.
Not sure if I would go that far.
She would probably take offense to that too, though. So, I mean.
I may have let a paddock term slip and I called her meat behind the steering wheel.
The fleshy meat bag behind the steering wheel.
She was none too happy about that.
Good job. Way to insult our guests. That's how we get repeat. What car club did Jason Kennedy from Auto Interest belong to before starting his HBDE organization? I'll give you a hint. It's not the Aztec Club or the Pinto Club.
The Yugo Club.
Very close, but no.
Midland Crisis Club.
It's a blue oval club, I will say that.
Subaru.
Oh, is it?
Technically a blue oval.
This is a club that Dean probably would have joined had he known it actually existed, because none of us realized it until this episode.
It's not SRO, it's
VO.
Oh, not SV. Close, very close. Taurus Club, the SHO Taurus Club.
Oh, yeah, the Yamaha engine, yeah.
See, I'm just holding out for the Ford Transit Van Club.
Wrong, I'm just picturing a bunch of soccer moms with, like, the Ford Taurus, like, station wagons pulling up.
And doing track days. That's the thing that blew our mind. They're going to, like, Road Atlanta and, like, all these places with Ford Tauruses.
The bonus question, I believe I have the right answer for this, but their first track, the track that they call home, is... Ginger Mon Man Mon Ginger Mon.
If we're talking vintage Ford, how about this one? What Ford production product was the fastest on the Dearborn Proving Grounds in the 1990s?
Ooh, I know this because I know who drove it.
On the handling course. So it's not just top speed, it's handling.
Oh, you know? It's on the hand. Oh, I know the answer to this because you told me the story. But
yeah, I think I told you the story. But
the Ford Probe, obviously.
Well, the Talladega Probe did 230 miles an hour with Lynn St. James behind the wheel.
Yeah.
But that's not what Dean's referring to. I know what the answer is.
Is it a Ford Fiesta?
No.
I'd like it to be a Fiesta.
The obvious guess from that era would be a Mustang GT.
Now with 215 horsepower.
But the real answer is the police interceptor.
Crown Vic with a police package.
Yay!
Those are fun.
Yeah.
Especially when you're steering from the passenger seat.
All right. Well, since Dean chimed in, I have a question for him. What does Greg Gill, president of SRO GT America, have in his garage?
I should know this, but I don't. He's probably, well, I don't know. The dead bodies of former executives? I don't know.
I know one of them makes Mountain Man Dan very happy.
Ooh, 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 ooh. Ford Taurus wagon.
You swear about it.
PNX.
At the time of the interview, he had two cars in his garage. He had a Lamborghini Urus and a Chevy C10 square body. And he said the C10 is more fun to drive than Lamborghini, but, you know, we'll just leave it there.
That Urus, I saw one of those in person. That thing is a sin. Crime against nature.
Yes, but what does it smell like? Refers to what?
Geoprism.
This was actually the headline of like drive-through episode like 13, I think it was.
With Donovan from Garage.
In the middle of the episode, he literally goes, yes, but what does it smell like?
Synthetic fuel, I don't know.
Crayons.
Only if it was an old Volkswagen. That's the right answer.
Well, no, any 1990s German product, all the adhesives would smell like crayons after a bunch of years.
Infinity J30, which did Japanese leather tanning process, which had a fishy smell.
So I'm going to give you guys the points for the smell of an interior. Specifically, it was the smell of a new Volvo that was using like renewable materials and all this crazy stuff that was unheard of, at least until now.
The vegan interior.
That's right. Exactly.
Awesome.
Yes, but what does it smell like?
Yeah.
One of my personal favorite episodes, which we re-released for St. Paddy's Day, which was the Airwolf episode. What was John Wayne hunting with his Apache helicopter?
Squirrel.
A bear.
No, that was the Red Bull Mini, wasn't it?
That is 100% correct. He mistook them for terrorists in Southern California, but they were actually Red Bull Minis headed to a car show.
Yeah, they thought they were a rocket launcher or some shit.
Oh, call the CIA.
His stories
are unbelievably amazing.
Yeah, he stayed at his place. He started talking about the A-10s flying over top of the Apaches. Yeah, that was a fun time.
What is the name of Annika Carter's Miata?
I'll give you four multiple choice answers. Is it Jeff, Bob, Dave, or Steve?
Oh, I got to go with Steve.
100%. The answer is Steve.
Yeah.
1,000 points to Izzy.
I was going to go with Athena. Annika backwards.
This one got hinted to earlier, so I'm going to ask it. What words did Brad and Tanya struggle with during a few drive-through episode recordings?
What words didn't we struggle with?
I've never struggled with a word.
Haribo.
Haribo is Brad's word. What is Tanya's word?
Anthropomorphized.
We did like 8 takes to get that word out.
I think we just spliced in somebody else saying it. What car would Tanya own above all others?
The Panda.
That's right. Yeah, 1,000 points to Daniel. Because the points don't matter, but the prizes are good.
I'll eventually get her to like in a square body. But
nope, not going
to
happen.
That Panda is as close to a square body as I'm willing to get. What does the X in PMX stand for?
Extreme
experience. No,
exhumed.
I will exhume your money from you.
Any other guesses what the X and PMX might stand for?
Does anyone know what the P or the M stands for?
Project Motoring Extraction.
That's true.
John Cafisi admits the X stands for nothing.
Yes.
It's because you got hooked on the PX in the military.
I have to admit, I do miss a good PX.
What is the one show that Eric refuses to watch?
Game of Thrones.
No, I think he watched Game of Thrones.
RuPaul's Drag Race.
I think that's on his top 10 list.
It is a car-related show.
Jay Leno's Garage.
RuPaul's Drag Race has drag racing. What are you talking about?
Do you not like motor me?
He hates John Davis with a
passion. This comes up literally every month.
Every episode.
Is it American Top Gear? Because American Top Gear is always worse.
It has garnered more U.S. viewership because of this show on Netflix.
Which is the opposite of World Rally Championship.
I know you watch Rust Valley Restore, so I know it's not that.
It's a good show.
That guy's nuts.
Every bad American version of
Top Gear. Yeah.
Top Gear, yeah, thank you.
Oh my God, they're so bad. But no, not that.
Is it Junkyard Wars? Are you anti-Junkyard Wars?
I am anti-Drive to Survive. I refuse to watch it. And Brad almost pinned me down at VIR. And he's like, I'm putting it on. And I'm like, nope, I'm leaving the house. We're not.
So instead, bonus, what did we watch at VIR?
I know.
Forza?
Naked and Afraid.
She was an answer to a previous question, although she was the wrong answer of whose stepmother she was.
It's true. And I mistakenly listened to this on the drive home from VIR because it started playing over my Bluetooth.
See, they are both pals and confidants.
Thank you for being a friend.
The problem with Drive to Survive is season spoiled before it starts.
Mike, you ruined
it. Nobody got that.
Yeah, it's Golden Girls.
Golden Girls.
Thank you for being
I made Brad watch the Golden Girls instead of watching Drive to Survive.
Because Golden Girls were amazing.
Here's a little secret. He didn't have to make me.
Hey, I watched that growing up. Great show.
He liked it. He really did.
Those four saucy broads.
You know, they are the basis for our Florida Man stories. That's all I'm going to say. We're going to get to those in a little bit.
Well, it's between them and Seinfeld and George's parents living in Del Boca Vista.
That being said, here's another SRO question for you. What did Jim Jordan say happened to Lynn St. James's Ford Pinto?
It exploded.
That is a very good answer. I know Dean knows the answer.
I think they did not.
I'm trying to remember that story because Jim and Lynn are friends and Jim raced a Pinto. Did he buy Lynn's ex-Pinto?
She drove it into a lake.
Oh.
Because it was already on fire.
It was actually during her first race, her like debut race. She went off in like turn two or three, I think she said, at Palm Beach and ended up in what she thought was just going to be a puddle or a small pond. And it ended up being a lake.
That's disturbing. That's like the guy at Lime Rock ending up underneath the wall.
100%. But, you know, she went on to do great things. So, you know, whatever. That's everybody's got an origin story, right? As we say.
Small sacrifices.
Really, it had exploded.
And it's a Pinto, so it definitely was a small sacrifice.
But I'll bump dad jokes on that one.
I'm going to say Lynn St. James, I believe, is being inducted in the Automotive Hall of Fame tomorrow.
Quite an honor.
And an amazing woman.
What is the, I'm assuming, GTM crew team diet?
Big Newtons, Haribo, gummy bears, and Monster.
That is 100% right. 1,000 points to Mountain Man Dan.
I listen to the end of every episode.
Yeah, all 133 of them that are currently
hang on, hang on. There's one more item. Goldfish.
Where did that
come from? Only if Richard's there.
Well, all right. I would have accepted Jaeger as an option, but Goldfish is, that's kind of out there, Mike.
If Richter's there, like a gallon of Goldfish is gone.
All right. I have a multiple choice question for you guys before we move on from our trivia. Brad is willing to sell his spot in line for his Tesla Cybertruck reservation. The question is, multiple choice, what would he sell it for? $100? A bucket of chicken? All the change you can find under the seat of your Chevy Cavalier, D, no lowballs, I know what I have, or all of the above, because it really doesn't matter.
He knows what he has.
It's true.
The bucket of chicken. Bucket of chicken.
No lowball.
I've lost my $100. That's what I have.
How much Doge did you get for that $100, Brad?
None.
Not going to lie, I'll put in a reservation for an ID Buzz, even if I'm not going to buy it, just until I get the full specs.
So I guess it's time that we move on. Like I said, we're going to be skipping industry news this month, but we're going to jump right into Brad's favorite section, Lost and Found, where he calls local dealerships to see if he can buy yet another 2016 Dodge Dart. But I think I found something better before we get into what's available new on dealership lots. Would you be interested in buying a vehicle known as the Bradley?
I would, if it wasn't this vehicle.
It wasn't an abomination.
If it wasn't what appears to be a C3 Corvette grafted to an Audi A8 front end.
I don't know how to explain any of this. You know, the DeLorean windows.
I know exactly what this car is. This is the front end of a 1989 Lincoln Town Car seared onto the back of a 1982 Honda CRX.
That was an episode of American Auto, wasn't it?
I can live with a lot of what's going on in this picture, except Mountain Man, since you're here with us, is that your cousin? Like, what is going on in this picture? Can you explain this to me as a bow tie man, exactly what's going on here?
Yeah, that's the country version. I'm sure you guys have seen the videos. Would you look at that? Would you look at that? Would you look at that? That's the guy that's the country version of.
That's the hype man, guys.
Hold on. So this car has got gullwing doors and T-tops?
Yes. Explain this engineering marvel to me.
Oh my God.
I mean, I'm completely befuddled by this vehicle. I'm sure it's amazing for 180 horsepower of 6.5 liters of V8. This is incredible stuff. The thing I read said it was based on an Audi 100, but I can see that from the body panels, but I don't see it from the wheelbase or the rest of the body line itself. It's a little bit too Bricklin for me overall.
I'm impressed that they actually got it together. That back end, it looks somewhere between a C3 Corvette and a Datsun Z. There's some weird lines going on in the back. The fenders are very C3. Rear window doesn't look like a C3. My stepdad had one. It doesn't quite look right.
I don't know that we need to explain it, Mike. But what we need to find out is what's new on dealer lots.
If you'll remember back to last month's episode, that 1988 pristine Cadillac DeVille base model is still for sale.
What are they asking for that again?
$17,988.
17 grand for an 80s Cadillac. I don't know. Is that a good deal?
No.
There was a resounding shake.
If it's never been registered, it still has the factory warranty.
$1,700 is not a good deal for an 80s Cadillac. What are you talking about?
You know it's going to break right away. And you're going to have to limit it.
It's a good deal if you're Robert De Niro in Casino.
Yes.
Or Boss Hogg in The Dukes of Hazzard. I mean, what are we talking about here?
You can also buy the brand new 2005 Ford GT base model, which is still for sale, for $450,000.
Did that come down? Because I thought that was $700,000 the last time we checked.
No, it's been
$450,000. Oh, nice. That's a steal then. I mean, look at that. Inflation, it's not really impacting the Ford GT.
Nope. I'm looking for a Dodge Dart, but they may all be gone. You can get a Chrysler 200.
Did you call Chuck?
No, I forgot to call Chuck Leduc.
This is a real person, people. I mean, we brought him up month after month after month.
He's who I bought my Grand Cherokee from. Good old Chuck Leduc.
Anything else for sale? Or are we remiss?
We would be remiss if we didn't talk about this next thing that Tanya wants to talk about.
I don't actually have any Tesla news.
How is this possible? With everything that is going on in the world of Dogecoin and Solar City and SpaceX.
Because we decided today, just spur of the moment, that anything that did not have to deal with Tesla, but still dealt with Elon Musk, went under Florida Man because he's a clown.
I also heard he pulled out of Twitter too. So that's
That
whole thing was a manipulating the market kind of thing. It's complete BS.
He's going to get hit hard because the judge they drew for the lawsuit has forced a sale before.
Is it Judge Judy? Is it Judge
John Capuzzi? He doesn't suffer fools.
He doesn't suffer fools.
But what's happening here, and I've said this before, is that we're at this point in the automotive landscape where there's as many bespoke manufacturers as there was at the birth of the automobile before all these companies merged and whatnot. So now we're hearing names like Lightyear and Aptera, XPeng, and a few others. So Tanya, let's talk about some of these Tesla alternatives that are out there.
Well, we had Bollinger before and Canoo and all those other ones. There's an Alpha, which hopefully they would make that pickup truck that looks like the one from Back to the Future.
I saw it in person at the Peterson when I was in LA. It is real and it is very cool.
I am seeing Lucids on the road.
Really?
Yeah.
Look, I'll buy a new car when I can get a Hutmobile, okay?
So a small tidbit of information I recently learned. Chevy Corvair, GM actually made an electric version of that.
There was a lot of one-offs like that. There wasn't a production one, but there was an electric Miata back in the early 90s. We built one. There's a lot of oddball ones if you look in history. I don't doubt there's an electric Corvair. There's probably an electric Corvette, too. GM R&D electrified a lot of things. The same with Ford.
Apparently, the Corvair, the reason it didn't make it was apparently the batteries were some sort of like silver something battery, and after like 40 charges, they had to be thrown in the ocean or something.
In the ocean, that's a good place for it.
I was like,
1,000%, yeah.
Yes, the only way to dispose is toss it in the ocean.
You have to club a baby seal with it first. It's the only way to deactivate it. Then you throw it in the ocean.
I mean, it was the 60s, people. There was a lot of drugs, all right? That's all I'm going to say. But this section of the drive-thru is really important, and I'm glad that Dean is here because one of the trivia questions, if you're playing the online version, is what was Dean's specialty when he was back in the automotive world as an engineer? And Dean, you were into
electric vehicles. I worked at Ford EV program in the 90s and then Nissan's in the late 90s, early 2000s. My daily driver from 1998 the 2006 was a Nissan Altra EV.
Never heard of one of those.
Can anybody name all of the electric vehicles that were out in 1998? Because the largest automakers, there was a ZEV mandate from 1990 proposing that 2% of all cars sold in California in 1998 be zero emission. They backed off because the battery technology just wasn't there. And CARB admitted that, you know, in 1998, there was no suitable battery technology. The seven largest automakers build demonstration fleet. The EV1's the only one that anyone remembers. Can you name any of the other electric vehicles that came out in 1998?
I remember first seeing it in one of the museums that I visited. The Toyota had their, they had like a RAV4 or something.
RAV4 EV. Very good. Very good.
Didn't they have a Ford Ranger that was an EV also?
Yep. I worked on that one. This is a good trivia question on that. What was the rear suspension setup?
That's super specific.
The Deon rear axle with a Watts linkage.
To support all the weight because the batteries were so heavy, right?
It was the packaging of how the motor fit in because everything was driven by the battery packaging. So we got, basically, it's just one thing led to another and we got forced into using a Deon rear axle. We were using composite leaf springs to save weight, which have no lateral stiffness. So we had to add a Watts linkage to add that in. It became a complicated mess. At the time, I think we were trying to sell them at $30,000 each and the range was only 50 miles. That was a hard sell.
Talk about range anxiety.
Yeah.
Speaking of complicated messes, these next three cars are significant as Tesla competitors. Why, Tanya?
Well, I don't know if someone would go so far as to say significant competitor, because I think solar EVs still have probably a long way to go. And we've touched on this one, I think already over a year ago, this Dutch company with their Lightyear Zero all solar vehicle. Had new industry news, quoted some range numbers that apparently they can get 350 miles out of their full solar charge. And then they claim, I guess, if all conditions, the sun is shining brightly that day, that within a day they can get 40, 43-ish miles of solar regen to add to your, to top off your mileage that day. I mean, it's all good and well at this point because this is everything, stars, moon, sun, brightly shining, everything aligned with the planets, everything, like the whole car is made out of carbon fiber. So surprisingly, it only weighs like 3,500 pounds, 770 pounds of battery in it. I'm actually surprised how light that is because there's a lot of just ICE cars out today that are well above that and not even as SUVs. So it's pretty impressive. But if the whole thing is made out of carbon fiber, I mean, of course, it's pretty light.
What else is it? When it's all made out of carbon fiber, it's also pretty expensive.
Yes.
What was the price?
This is not for the faint of heart. This cannot compete against the Tesla because it costs. Anyone have a guess?
$175,000.
No.
Because 175 is with the light pulse.
Can I get a 180? 180. Do I get
247?
Do I get a 250? Anyone?
We're still going. $310,000.
Oh, you've overshot. You've overshot.
Too high, Bob. $1. $265,000.
Oof. I mean, that DeLorean's looking really good right now.
Look, it's all fun and games until you got to make that that stretch between Wendover and Salt Lake City. You hit those headwinds.
It's all fun and games until the tractor trailer throws a rock and cracks your solar panel.
The Lucid is $175,000 for theirs. Their big selling point is they have 500 miles of range in the top model. But yeah, 175 hurts too.
But then you've got the Aptera that's claiming 1,000 miles.
But this looks like something from Blade Runner. Is that the right movie?
Yeah.
It's that weird airfoil shape that just has a tripod of wheels.
It looks like it needs a propeller on top.
Similar to that Mercedes that we've been talking about, where they're going an exorbitant amount of distance, right? It's all very aerodynamic, but not very practical.
So what happens when those are on the road with like 2007 Grand Denali?
They die.
You ever seen a bug hit a windshield?
Like, this is my thought. Like, I would be very happy to drive something like small and compact, like me and Steve and some cats. We don't need a huge backseat or whatever. But then I remember I live in redneck country and everybody drives one-ton dualies. I need something that has a bumper.
The funny part is the Aptera advertises themselves as room for two people and one pet. because it is a two-seater that is just like this weird slanted cargo area in the back.
Two people and one pet, but that pet has to be a hamster.
The part that gets me about this is the never charge solar. And I'm like, that's impossible. Unless it's some sort of perpetual motion machine where it's generating power as it's going. There's no amount of sun, even in the middle of Death Valley, that they can absorb to keep this thing going, to never have to plug it in anywhere. It just doesn't, it's just not feasible to me.
We drive insane distances, and a lot of people drive insane distances, but their argument is you can get like 40 miles a day of range. So if you live close to work and the sun is in the right spot of the sky, it's never cloudy, and you live in the right part of the country, you can get up to 40 miles of range a day. You never have to charge, and you get 11,000 miles a year. Some insane number.
I mean, I used to have a 12-mile commute, so for me, that would have been perfect.
But you also parked in a garage, didn't you? Because otherwise, your car was an oven.
That would have been less perfect, but...
So the one thing about the Aptera that I do like, they've got it to where... they're all about people that buy their products to work on their own vehicles. So if something breaks, you contact them, they'll send you the replacement part to replace it yourself, which is something I do like about their business model.
This is much more affordable, although I don't think I would want to spend this much on this.
Are we still in the six figures?
No, five figures.
$99,000.
Way lower.
Really?
$67,000. Isn't it in like the mid-30s?
$67,000.
No, lower. So they say it will range from 25,900 to 46,000 plus.
The challenge on all of these is there's what they call the valley of death between hand built. You can build supercars at 500,000 and find suckers to buy them. And you can mass produce cars 40 an hour off an assembly line. But anything in between is really, really difficult to make money at. You don't have the economy of scale of a production. You can't build a car for $25,000 having craftsmen build it. So that's the challenge for all of these.
But it comes in a box. You put it together. It's a kit car.
Oh, that's why some assembly required.
Yeah. Insert tab A into slot B. But that's also why they're probably big on people repairing their own cars, because now, oh, we don't have service centers. It's not our problem. Because everyone complains about Tesla, where you have to wait for them to drive out to you, or you have to happen to find some Tesla service center near you because they don't have a dealership network like, you know, the big manufacturers do. So they can use that as a selling point, but at the same time, it gets them out of headaches.
No, but the best way to work on your Tesla is to drive down to Home Depot.
We know that.
Only if you need corner molding to hold the battery in place.
You were saying for the Aptera, Mike, regarding the cargo space, the video I was watching, a guy actually climbed in, a guy close to my size actually climbed in there and was able to fit in the cargo area. I don't know if they would have been able to close the hatch with him in there, but it was a decent amount of space.
They have a kit available in theory, you know, once the car's in production. You can open the rear hatch and turn the back into a tent because it bridges from the where the hatch is open to where the cargo area is.
Stealing from Aztec Technologies, what you're saying.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it doesn't look as good as an Aztec.
I think you've got the two extremes. You've got the Aptera, which is all about hyper-efficiency and minimalist. Colin Chapman, add lightness. And then you've got the Hummer EV. How many people is the Hummer EV going to kill? 9,000 pounds?
All of them.
Yeah. That thing, I can't imagine.
The end of civilization.
Those things just scare the crap out of me.
I'm interested in seeing the Hummer EV's off-road technology for like the crab walk and things like that, because I think that'd be very useful for like the off-road people.
Yeah. But
I just don't know if the battery's going to hold up for some of the places you go off-road, because you get out there. I know.
We're going to talk about that exact point you bring up, because you brought it to our attention about range here in a little bit. So let's put a pin in that for a second. Let's talk about the XPeng P7.
So this one is a Tesla competitor.
It's a Tesla facsimile is what it is.
It is better looking than the Botox looking lip injected Tesla front end. Ask me how.
All right. I'm with you there. So the back end looks like a Polaris. The front end, they stole a bunch of stuff from the Lucid Air. There's a lot of things going on with this car that I don't understand, especially the article. It's a lot of hype. Porsche co-developed. And I'm like, where did you get all this garbage? I mean, whatever. The interior is probably one of the best modern interiors I've ever seen. I like the heads-up display. I like the way it looks. It doesn't look like it's made from an IKEA showroom collection like a lot of these other EVs. It's kind of well put together. They claim this car has been around now for 12 years or whatever it is they developed 2 years after Tesla came out with the Model S. And I just look at it, I just keep kind of scratching my head. Like, even the logo looks like a Polaris, right? I don't know what to think.
They also allege 329 miles of range and a price tag of $53,000.
Here's the other part that's confusing. You scroll halfway down this ridiculous article, you know, again, co-developed by Porsche and whatnot. And it goes miles per gallon, 1824 horsepower, 310 engine, 3.8 liter V6. And I'm like, hold on a second. This is a website dedicated to EVs. This is supposed to be an EV. And why am I getting Edmund specs about a V6? So is this an April Fool's joke? Like, what the heck is this?
It's China. So you can't believe any of it.
Wait, my 96 Honda Accord get better gas mileage than this thing?
According to this article, yes. And I'm very, very confused.
Being a Chinese company, though, it was a joke we used to use in the military. We were working on one aircraft and didn't have the proper tech data with us. And we need to figure out, you know, how something went. We go look at one of the aircraft. And we always call it Chinese tech data because the Chinese always like copy stuff from other countries and put their own spin on it. So maybe they looked at a Porsche and that's how they considered them collaborating with it.
That's why Volkswagen only ever sold knockdown cars in China for the longest time, because if you manufacture in China, you have to partner with a Chinese company and basically license all your tech to that company and they can do whatever you want with it. So Volkswagen would build complete cars, take it apart, ship it in parts to China and put it back together.
Well, that's why that second row of headlights is like straight off of a McLaren 720. I mean, this is such a parts bin car. It reminds me of like you're walking in downtown LA or New York and you run by that cell phone store and it's like all these off-brand cell phones that sort of look like Samsung and Apple, but they're not quite the same. And when you fire it up, it's just not the same experience. That's sort of where I'm going with this car, is that I would drive one to, you know, do the journalist thing and say, yeah, I drove it, but I don't think I could willingly buy this thing, even at the low price tag of 53 grand.
I get it. It's no Daihatsu Sirade. It's its own thing.
You don't want a Samsung or an Arpel?
An Arpel? Yeah.
Two vehicles you haven't mentioned on EVs. What's anyone's take on VinFast? What about what Hyundai's doing? Hyundai's going pretty strong. The Ioniq looks pretty stout. Certainly a competitor to the Tesla Model 3.
We have talked about the Ioniq 5 a couple of times now. You know, all the commercials doing with Jason Bateman and all stuff. We've done some spotting on the road. I think they're pretty neat. I like where they're taking that design. And next month, we're going to talk about the NRE 22E, as well as the N74 concept vision or whatever they call it. Those two cars are kind of carrying some of the technology over. They're doing hydrogen. There's some really neat stuff going on at Hyundai. And we're going to talk about more about that next month. Now, the other one, the VinFast that you mentioned, Tanya, did we cover that at all?
I don't think so.
VinFast is getting $1.2 billion of incentive money from the state of North Carolina to build their plant.
That's right.
So pretty serious investment there.
Something to check out. Maybe we'll have to do some research.
And VinFast is a lot of ex-BMW people running it. Could be serious.
So the EV market obviously has a lot of demand, as you know, sales have been growing over the last couple of years, but now they've got a supply issue, much like ICE engines. Their supply is not because of chips, though.
What?
Lithium ion batteries.
Oh.
Nope, not because of chips.
Oh, darn, I thought it was because of chips again.
Nope, because of batteries.
We can't produce them fast enough, or we're running out of the rare earth metals to make them?
Yes.
The answer is just yes.
The big answer right now is, you know, we can't produce them fast enough, but obviously because we don't have enough plants, but there's all kinds of plans to build more plants to be able to do this. But then it brings up the next point of the rare earth metals and everything to build the battery.
Well, some of it is just the standpoint of philosophically, you want to have a super large SUV with 3,000 pounds of batteries, or do you want some hyper efficient little two-seaters for commuter cars? Probably have 5 or 6 small cars with the same amount of batteries as one large SUV. The customer gets what the customer wants in large SUVs, but it's kind of silly for someone to be driving an 8-passenger SUV to haul 1 4-year-old to daycare.
I'm not going to lie, I would have killed to have the ID3 in the US rather than the ID4.
Yeah. I believe the ID3 used to be called the e-Golf. Is that right?
No, they're very yeah. The e-Golf was
a mistake.
Nothing but a car grab. That was, let's shove some battery. It was like the range was too short.
This is where I've said before on this show, EVs are a good idea. 100% battery is still a panacea. To Brad's point, rare earth metals are a problem. This is probably why we're not talking about Tesla, because SpaceX is up harvesting stuff from Mars to bring back for us to build more batteries, right? They can't be building more cars if we don't have batteries. I still think hybrid is the answer. I've been saying that for a while. Now, what you choose to power the hybrid with is the bigger question. Is it synthetic fuel from Porsche? Is it diesel? Is it gas? What is it? But I think that seaweed. Combination, yeah, seaweed, whatever, algae, I don't know.
What type of hybrid? If you get a plug-in hybrid, you have the potential that you mentioned the 12-mile commute. If you had a plug-in hybrid, you could be pure electric at least 5 days a week and only kick on the gas once in a while as needed. If you're a one-car family, I would never recommend anyone buy an electric vehicle if they're a one-car family. Plug-in hybrid could make perfect sense. If you're a two-car family, what are the odds of both people needing to go more than 100 miles on the same day in different directions? I mean, I've got a first-generation Nissan Leaf that's only an 80-mile car, but I bought it for under $15,000. I think I told you my little stunt. I did 14 months without spending a dime on electricity. I did all free public charging and charging a couple of my clients where they have EV charging. So it can be done really cheap if you have that mindset. If you're trying to get a car that will be a direct replacement for every gas thing, costs go up because your batteries just keep getting bigger and bigger and everything. Weight is the enemy.
We've owned an ID4 now since last March. And we have a long commute, has more enough range to get us to and from work. But we've also done 3 round trips to Florida. Yeah, you add time with charging, and to an extent it works well when you have a small child who wants to get out of the car every few hours anyway, or needs a diaper change or something. It's doable, but it's not, I mean, I'll admit, it's not for, you have to be willing to make those stops and charge. And, you know, last year, gas prices were still kind of down. Now that gas prices have spiked, we're really reaping the benefits in terms of what our electric bill went up versus what we'd be paying in gas.
Saw an article recently where an individual had an EV that the batteries took a crap on it, and it was only about $14,000 for them to replace the batteries. For the average citizen, that's a big chunk of money.
That article was about a 2016 or it's like it's already out of warranty.
That's not that old. A 6-year-old ICE car to spend $15,000 in repairs, you'd have to blow up the engine and then some to spend that kind of money.
Replace the engine 3 times for that.
Yeah.
The Subaru? What?
As more cars get out there, there's going to be aftermarket solutions. Because I was talking to a friend of mine who worked for a battery company. He's telling me that I should be able to get a replacement battery for my Leaf. I haven't verified this, but he says, I should be able to buy a replacement battery for my Leaf for under $5,000 that will get me over 200 miles.
Guess what's coming back? Maybe.
And there's enough Leafs out there that you can do that. I mean, no one's probably going to be doing that for some of these other nichier vehicles. But as these vehicles age out, and if there's a large enough pool of them, someone will figure out, yeah, I can sell battery packs for better and less expensive than the OE replacement.
Oh, I said we need Radio Shack back.
I just saw something. Radio Shack is actually back in business, I found out. There's 400 stores in the U.S. They reorganized, and they're causing quite the stir on Twitter. So
a lot of modern EVs, because of, I think, California's rules are on EV warranty, you're going to get an 8-year, 100,000-mile warranty on that battery that at least retains 80% of its life, of its range. I mean, yeah, there's going to be batteries that expire because people do bad charging cycles or just they just break. But how much would my Titan have cost for a new motor had that 5-liter V8 Cummins that they only sold in the Titan for 3 years blew up and I needed a new motor after 2 years? You have the flip side of that.
Since the government wants to push for the EVs so badly, I think you were saying probably be able to get a battery for like $5,000 or whatever. But if they were to standardize the batteries across the board, that itself would drop price a lot because each manufacturer is doing batteries their own way. And when you do that, it just makes it so much more expensive. So if they can find a way to have the decent battery technology, standardize that across the board, because look at how much of a game changer it was for OBD stuff back in the, was it 96 when OBD2 became the standard across the board? Mm-hmm. When you used to go out and spend all these different prices for so many different OBD connectors, depending on what manufacturer it was, you were spending so much money on the diagnostic equipment, and then you went from that to being able to have one connector. It made a huge game changer for the maintenance side of it.
You have so many licensing issues with that because you have Tesla's going down one branch, working with Panasonic and their patents for doing like the large packs of tiny round cells. And then you have Volkswagen, who's off working with LG on the European delivery ID4, ID3s. And now they're building a partnership with a different manufacturer in Georgia who's going to be building battery packs in Georgia for the US bound ID4s. So you have so many licensing issues. At most, you can't standardize the full package size because you're not going to fit the same pack in an ID4 or Hummer that you're going to fit in, you know, Smart EV, for example, from size perspective. At most, you might be able to standardize modules, but even then you're limiting your packaging capabilities because models might have to do different things based off of cooling requirements, which is honestly what bit the leaf. Unfortunately, gave EVs a bad name because their batteries were dying so quickly because Nissan didn't do active cooling on those. You try to standardize on something as complex as an EV battery, there's just so many variables. It's hard to
get think it's going to happen. It's just we're too early in the game. You're absolutely right that there needs to be a standardization, but we're too early. I mean, it's like, how many different stupid plugs can we get for our phones? We need standardization on a lot of things in life. The egos of such of companies, Tesla doesn't want to cooperate with everyone. That's why they have a different, they didn't adopt the same SAE standards as everyone else. But some of it, I think we're just too early on the batteries. There's still a lot of new stuff that may or may not work. We haven't hit the Model T yet of batteries. Someone's going to hit it, and we just don't know when.
Now, Tesla is going to adapt CCS, but yeah, only to get that... Only get that federal subsidy money.
None of Elon Musk's businesses would exist without government money.
Even Twitter. But
yeah.
So there's a lot to consider there because, you know, you guys are talking about standardization. I picked up on something Dean said about, you know, being able to switch out the batteries on the EVs. The only thing that I take issue with on that is if you've ever replaced the battery on your cell phone with one that wasn't directly from the manufacturer, it never seems to be right ever again. It doesn't charge the same way. It doesn't hold a charge the same period of time. You end up buying 12 more. It's really not worth it. At that point, you're like, get rid of it, get something else. And unfortunately, that's the model I think that the auto industry is starting to develop. And Brad calls it all the time, the Apple model, right? We're software development companies now. The car is just an object. It's something you trade in when the umpty up EV 11 comes out and then the 12 comes out, everybody stands in line to get the 12 and turn in their 11, you know, that kind of thing. But to your point about standardization, what's been standard forever is fuel delivery, a liquid delivery system. Because here's the problem, even with EVs in the future, if we come up with a generalized battery, my 90-year-old grandmother's not going to be able to go to her local Sheetz or Rofo and do the quick exchange of her battery because they're going to still weigh a ton. It's not like Ryobi where I could just slam it into 100 different objects and it's the same battery. I just never see it getting to that point, or it becomes like some of those Black Mirror episodes where you pull up to the gas station and there's a car that looks just like yours waiting for you that you just hop in and drive away. So now nobody ever really owns a car. They become these just communal objects to get you from, you know, one location to the other. So there's a lot of negatives against the EVs still, even outside of range anxiety. Some of those are conspiracy theories and whatever, but the autonomy of a liquid-driven ICE-powered vehicle, it always will give you that freedom to go wherever you want, whenever you want. So I'm still banking on somebody coming to the table with a fuel that doesn't pollute and gives our piston-powered vehicles a second life.
With that, Eric, basically no ownership anymore, just constantly leasing in a sense to where you have for a couple of years and get a newer
model.
So that's actually starting to happen a lot in agriculture already with diesel tractors, because the prices are getting so outrageous. The amount of technology on them, it's to where a lot of the manufacturers of the tractors don't want the farmers working on them anymore. So like John Deere's got a thing to where the farmers are not allowed to touch it if they own it. It has to be John Deere servicing it. I think I mentioned to you previously about the individuals that are farming some land at my cousin's place. The tractors they're using, they keep for 4 or 5 years and they upgrade to a new model.
Volvo actually came out with this in that not only are you leasing the car, there's a subscription model for the car. It's also a subscription model for the insurance too. You just pay one price to Volvo, and the dealerships hate it because they don't get as much of the income, but you pay one price and you can go in and swap your cars. You can even go to different classes and change your monthly rate, and so on and so forth. That model exists out there. For the swapping batteries, there's other countries that are already doing it where you pull in, it puts your car up on a lift, a bunch of screws get pulled out, the thing gets pulled out before you put back in. Like Tesla did one for tech demonstration to get federal money, and then they abandoned the idea. But that's feasible. Even the ID4, the ID3, that whole platform, the battery is just taken out with a lift from the bottom of the vehicle if they need to service the battery. Biggest risk you have when trying to do battery swaps is you're now dealing with 400 volt, 900 volt systems that you're disconnecting potentially a lot of connectors. Even like, if Ford has to pull a battery from a Mach-E, their procedure is the whole area is roped off. There must be two mechanics, one standing by in case the other one gets himself electrocuted to make sure he gets away from the battery. Okay. But I mean, part of that is just because, we might need to mature the way the connections happen and stuff like that too. Yeah. But battery swapping is happening in some places. It is feasible.
I just imagine when that happens and you pull up to a normal gas station now that's got, a small little lot that it sits on. When that happens, you're basically pulling to a big warehouse where they're going to have racks and racks of batteries on like a charger that they're cycling through as people come through, especially in cities and stuff where there's a lot of people coming in to change batteries out on a regular basis. Say you got 300 people coming in there a day. That's a lot of battery packs to swap out. And they're going to need a lot sitting there stored charging in the process.
Well, they got to do something now that they're not doing Jiffy Lube $19 oil changes. So battery changes.
I think most of the battery swapping is limited to fleets. But, actually, I can tell you one that combines battery swapping, right to repair, and tractors. Monarch Tractors, which is a spinoff from Motivo, has an electric tractor with autonomous capability. And they have a swappable battery pack so that a farmer can basically run it continuously. You're not going to have level 3 charging out in the field, but you can roll back and you can potentially swap out a battery pack. But, there is no one size fits all solution on any of these. That rapid battery exchange has potential for fleets and things. But if you look at the most expensive thing on your car is the battery, buying a second battery doesn't help you on the economics. It can work in some fleet applications, things even like forklifts and things. Forklifts don't need really advanced batteries. They can use old-fashioned dumb lead acid because they need the ballast. There's going to be a whole bunch of different solutions come out of this world of electrification where it's not just pure EVs, but plug-in hybrids, small battery packs that are swappable. There's a lot of opportunities out there for solutions in different companies.
So Saturn, back when that company existed, actually had what I thought was a brilliant plan. They were going to make a sister vehicle to the Chevy Volt, but they were going to make it even closer to a diesel electric train. They were going to use a diesel generator as the generation source that they could run at peak efficiency at all times to recharge the battery and drive the vehicle. There is value in that. But as far as battery swaps, personally, I don't think I'd ever want to do that because I know what the health of my battery is based off of what I get when I recharge it. I swap out a battery, I make it one that now has 80% of range or less. It's a crapshoot what battery you're going to get put back in your car. So I'd much rather spend the time at a charging station, getting my battery up to a condition that I know I get up to this amount, and I know I'm going to be able to drive this far as long as I'm not driving like a total dickhead, which, for me, is kind of hard to do. But kind of Dean's point, it probably would work great for fleets. For individual users, you're taking a big risk there unless you're on a subscription plan where you just don't care what battery you get. And, don't have to worry about what battery's in there when you turn in your lease. Yeah.
Well, I mean, for most people, a car is an appliance. They really don't care.
Exactly.
Until they can't get to the next stop.
Some of those people shouldn't be driving EVs. I did training for all the fleet owners of the Altra EV back in 1998. And I would tell them, you are not driving a car. You are operating an airplane that operates on the ground. When you fly out of LAX to go to Chicago, you're assuming the pilot checked the fuel gauge before they take off. You don't get up to 30,000 feet and say, oh, shit, we better land in Phoenix. We don't have enough fuel to get to Chicago. You have to do the same thing with an electric vehicle. You also have to take into account elevation change. Driving Redondo Beach to Big Bear is a lot different drive than Big Bear to Redondo Beach, even though it's the same mileage.
And not just elevation. When a gas vehicle, you ignore this, but temperature and weather effect range.
And wind shear.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
The extra drag just from water being on the ramp from the rain.
Well, and also if you want to actually run the heater. I mean, that was on the early EVs of the late 90s. Heat and AC was a huge killer on range.
Volkswagen in the US did not fit a heat pump on the ID4, so it is entirely resistive heat. So yeah, in the winter I can feel the pain in addition to having to heat the battery. AC is actually a lot better than it used to be. The range hit for AC is not that bad anymore, but heat's a big one. You don't get that free heat anymore from all those explosions under the
hood. Right, yeah.
You guys are talking about range anxiety, different driving conditions, weather, et cetera, Dan brought to our attention a story about some journalists that compared a brand new Chevy Silverado with its 6.5 liter V8 against the new Ford Lightning EV truck while towing a camper.
I think some of your facts there are wrong.
Oh, are they?
It was a GMC with the 6.2 liter.
Oh, my bad.
Yes.
Whatever. It's an LS something or other against the new Ford Lightning towing the exact same ATC camper that weighed in about 6,000 pounds. And the results were shocking. They sat down and did all this math, basically north of Denver, working their way south, moved about 1,000 feet in elevation. And, you know, they said, we're going to go 150 miles on this charge, even though the Ford Lightning can go 300 on its projected battery range and all this kind of thing. And Dan, what did they end up going?
Ford EV made it half of the distance to what they had planned to travel. They had to recharge it to get it back to the drop-off point for the camper.
They went about 85 miles, or 85 or 89 miles. They did not go far.
Correct. And the Silverado made it to where they were and back, and then filled up again, still had gas left over. And so when you're doing all that complicated mental gymnastics about, is it worth it or not? One of the points they made was, we knew that the Lightning wasn't going to be as good as that GMC, but we needed to do a real world test, because they said themselves, we could have put a, you know, water tank behind here on a flat trailer that would have been way more aerodynamic, but that's not what people are towing around with their trucks. That's not what they're going to the hardware store to get. As we know, Tanya goes to get mulch. That's what everybody's in line for with their pickup truck. So your pallet of mulch on the back of your pickup truck is going to severely decrease the overall range of the vehicle. So I thought this test was very telling and very truthful instead of all this marketing fluff, because we've said it before. Am I ready to run out and replace my tow rig tomorrow with a Rivian or with a Lightning? Heck no, because I won't make it to Watkins Glen or even Summit Point on a single charge. I mean, Summit Point is about, let's say, 80 miles from my house. I won't make it there, right? I will literally be running on, I don't know what the equivalent of fumes is in electrons, but I won't get there.
Didn't Sam say that there's somebody shows up at, maybe it's Summit Point, towing his Miata Rivian?
But he didn't say how many times that guy had to stop when the
or how far he's traveling.
How many electric stations are there on the way to Summit Point?
A lot, actually.
It depends on where he's coming from.
Not that many, probably.
For that particular one, I think it's about a 40-mile one-way trip for that guy, if I understand correctly.
They have charging stations at Summit Point. But yeah. I just want to make two observations about this video, because it was a YouTube video that we watched. Point number one, the guy brought up one of my main concerns about all these charging stations are pull-in only.
Yeah.
And you have to back out. And if you've got a trailer behind you, the only way to do it and not block an entire row of traffic is to completely decouple the trailer, then pull up, charge, go back, recouple the trailer, and then be on your way for another 80 miles.
It's a hassle.
It's completely absurd. That'll double the length of your trip if you got to do this over and over and over again.
Well, not only that, if they change the positioning of the charging stations where you could pull in up against them, you know, where they're parallel to you, you'd still be blocking 12 other charging stations that are in the same direction, because now you're 40 feet long. And so they're not taking into account, they're not future-proofing these charging stations for what people might be using them for.
To that point, I mean, we block the gas pumps.
It's so awkward.
But I mean, we only do it for 5 minutes and then we're gone. How long does the charging take from like 9% to get to 100?
Yeah. That guy took like an hour charging and only got it up to, what was it, like
75%?
75%. The guy in the Silverado or whatever, he made it all the way back to their original gas station while the other dude had just set off from where he was charging and he wasn't fully charged. I mean, that's the problem. That's what we keep talking about. In a passenger vehicle like Mike and Chrissy's, the ID4, it's a lot easier. You're not carrying around all this other stuff like we're accustomed to, like the motorsports and vehicle enthusiasts that are maybe moving their show car or taking their track car somewhere or going camping. That's always the big thing. Like, I want to go camping. There's no charging station on the mountain, you know, that kind of deal. And it makes it just a challenge for everybody.
Right. And my second observation about the video is more just, it irked me. This 22-minute video, I don't know how these people have 1 million subscribers. This 22-minute video could have been done in 5 minutes. If we cut out 15 minutes of, let's hear from our sponsor. Here, we're advertising, blah, 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 blah. This is this and this is that. Oh my God. I'm sure these guys are perfectly nice guys. The one guy in the trailing vehicle, oh my God, he was about as mountain man Dan as you can get. But the rest of the video, it could have been done in 5 minutes. I don't know why I needed a 22-minute
video.
You're
such a millennial. Your attention span is all of nothing anymore.
I did not need to hear about their sponsor at the gas station, and then their sponsor at this, and their sponsor
at that.
That's
how they make some of the money that they have, to do.
This is where we're failing, but anyway.
Well, we need 22-minute long videos.
I was going to say, this whole comparison exercise was completely pointless. They did not do a tug of war between the F-150 and the GMC. That's the only test that ever matters with the electric pickup trucks.
No, they should have run them around the Nürburgring.
Torque.
That's the only thing that matters.
It's true. What lap time do you have at the ring?
Yeah, your F-150 Lightning.
That's torque. But I have a quick question. Maybe it's not that quick, but since we have so many EV experts on, I'm pro EV, like once we can set up the infrastructure. So I don't want this to come off like I'm anti-EV like vehicles. But what happens to those burnt out batteries? What happens to an electric vehicle when it's no longer a viable vehicle?
Volkswagen actually put this in their plan.
No. She already answered her own question earlier. You club the baby seal and dump it in the ocean.
Thank you.
Well, my Jeep or Steve's Jeep and my Honda are both metal bodies. The Jeep does have a fiberglass top. But if those two vehicles are totaled tomorrow, heaven forbid, I can sell them for scrap metal. People are going to want parts off of them. They can be completely vultured out. Like even the seats can be vulched up and turned into more seats. What happens when somebody totals their Prius? That's all plastic and uranium.
So the battery packs, Volkswagen is building factories to recycle 90 to 95% of the content of the battery pack itself. So they can take a battery pack, recycle it, and reclaim 90 or 95% of the material.
Impressive.
You have the ability to reclaim most of those precious metals that are going into that. For some reason, Volkswagen decided to make every body panel on that damn thing steel, so it weighs a ton. So it's not much different from a generic car there. And for the cars that are carbon fiber or plastic, how long ago was Saturn making cars entirely out of plastic? I mean, that's not a new problem.
That's sort of my question is with more and more of, all the fiberglass and that, I'm an idiot. What happens if somebody totals their 2007 Prius right now?
I don't know what Toyota has in terms of what their infrastructure is for recycling batteries.
It goes back to standardization, right? We don't have an answer to this yet.
It's developing. There are multiple places they're looking. People are going to figure out how to make money recycling batteries because of the raw material. You leave a lead acid battery out, someone will steal it because there's recycling value in it.
A good reason to have an EV car versus an SUV is it's harder for someone to get under and steal your battery like they do with catalytic converters, right?
Well, unfortunately, I'm going to say this because I know firsthand, the lead battery value has dropped in half in the past couple of years. So it's not as good as it used to be.
That's true.
I want to go back to the truck thing real quick because we have an EV. We've owned it for a year. We drive it daily. I bought a new truck. I bought a gas truck. I will say the 0.7 miles per kilowatt hour they got on that Lightning in that test is abysmal. Not totally out of the realm of possible. In the winter, I get 2.4. In the summer, I get 3.2.
But you're not pulling 6,000 pounds.
Well, yeah, no, I'm not pulling a trailer. The EV stations right now, no, they're meant for people who are buying vehicles that are commuting and DC fast charge is meant for people who are trying to get far distances. It's not for everyday use. So in that regard, it's not suited for trucks. There are people that are trying to make EV stations that are a bit more like gas stations where everything will be pulled through. Electrify America just released a design for what their new stations are going to look like, where they actually look like gas stations and they have this inside lounge for you to go in and sit in and relax while the car's charging, as opposed to being in a Walmart parking lot or our favorite ones actually as on Sheetz in Rocky Mountain, North Carolina, because we all love Sheetz.
That one you back up to.
Yeah.
You have no choice but to back up and it's only 4 spots.
But yeah, so towing with an EV is not reasonable right now. The Ford Lightning, honestly, in my opinion, is for the I need to drive a truck, but I want to drive an EV crowd. And I need to buy 5 bags of mulch once a decade crew. I think it's a really cool truck in terms of what it is, but I don't think these F-150 Lightnings and these GMC Hummers serve anything more than to make their numbers look good as a manufacturer. We need more things that are people-centric and smaller for the earlier EVs.
couple things that I've mentioned when I sent the video over is I think a better comparison, just because I think this is a kind of an apples to oranges type thing, because they used the Chevy truck and the Ford EV. I think it would have been cool to see the gas Ford version of the F-150 compared to the EV version of it, because that would have been same truck, just different powertrains in it. And then one of the things the guy brought up in it is, like, if they go to the lake, there's no charging place at the lake. So for people that like off-roading, such as myself, like say we were to go to a trip to the Cove again as a group and somebody took out there with an EV, who's bringing the generator to charge it up for the weekend while we're there to get back home?
It self-generates. Remember, you just plug itself into its generator and it keeps going. Yeah.
That was a hilarious video.
We talked about that last month. But you know who's throwing caution to the wind and saying, we're not worried about EVs right now? A name that you probably haven't thought of in a while, and they're going to come back really strong and make a big splash with a car known as the Evolution, to play off of that. Number 11 comes in from Mitsubishi saying they're going to come back with an Evo 11.
They've been talking about this since 2019, though.
It's going to be an EV version?
Isn't the Lancer an SUV now?
No, the Eclipse is an SUV.
Yes, that is true. I'm going to ask one simple question. When was the last time you saw a Mitsubishi dealership that didn't sell HVAC equipment?
There's one by my house, believe it or not, open up in Redondo Beach.
I'd have checked if there's still the one in Frederick or not.
Now, I know in this article, it's just an artist rendering of what the Evo 11 would look like. I hate to say I'm shamefully unimpressed by it, because it looks like a bunch of LEDs strapped to an Evo 10 and they kind of squish the headlights off of a GTI. I'm not a big fan of it. And I don't think anybody really cares. And not because I'm not a fan of it. We've forgotten about Mitsubishi. I beg the question, do they even really make cars anymore? Yeah, I understand that they make air conditioners and utility trucks, but in the United States, I know we covered this before, there just isn't the network anymore. I don't even know why they're trying.
Need an electric DeLorean.
Well, we are getting an electric DeLorean, and that was a whole other episode into itself.
Famous deal, baby.
So here's where Eric's question is flawed. What do we think of Mitsubishi? And the answer is, we don't.
We don't.
100%.
The Evo 11 will come out right after the next rotary Mazda.
Oh, Lord. Don't even get me started on that. Well, now that I've thoroughly lowered your expectations.
Lowered expectations.
Let's talk about the ability to buy a brand new Chevy square body today. Dan, would you care to enlighten us on this article that you brought to our attention?
It's mixed feelings on this article.
But it's not a brand new car, though. You have to supply them with they're doing the Singer thing.
For the additional money, they will source one out. But yeah. They take the GM square body and they basically do a retro mod where they put newer chassis underneath of it, newer drivetrain. So it's not necessarily new, but they do go through and basically redo the body completely. And if it's a rusted out one, they fix all the messed up panels and everything. But I can't wrap my head around the prices they're charging, because it's in the six figures to do this on one where you supply it. I mean, I love resto mod stuff with any of the old classic vehicles, putting a newer, more modern drivetrain, it's much more efficient in it. But I love seeing my square bodies on the road, but I can't, it just hurts to see the price they're asking.
And what is the price? What is that price, Dan?
In the six figures, over six figures. I think the one they were saying, it could be like $120,000 for you to do it.
It ranges between $150,000 and $250,000.
Yes, but I did a little bit of research and it looks like $30,000 of that is between the motor and trans itself.
We need to put them in touch with Chaz's, because they'll be able to get the engines and shit a lot cheaper.
Chaz's cannot get you an LT4 supercharged motor for less than $16,000.
You need to work out a sponsorship deal with them where you supply them with 50 of your square bottles you have on the mountain and they build you two.
No, I can't do that.
Brad hit right on the point that I was going to make, which is, realistically, Mountain Man, what do you think you could build one of these for if you were doing it? I want to know the number. Like, what do you think?
New sourced parts. I'm not talking about going to Chaz's and picking up a steering column out of a Ford Mercury Sable wagon to put in your square body, because one of the square bodies all rusted out. I'm talking about new LT4 motor, new 8-speed transmission, legit, like what they're doing. You couldn't do it for less than $150,000.
Before he answers, is he also calculating in his time, value of money, hours spent on this build?
They're buying all crates of five stuff.
Well, Daniel's going to take 20 years to build it.
And we can't go by Eric's numbers, because nobody can afford those.
My numbers are realistic.
You mean actual numbers from suppliers? Yeah, nobody can afford
those. No, I'm talking as in time, his time for money.
I mean, you have to set a value for your labor. Let's say it's $100 an hour. This thing's going to cost you $100,000 to build, yeah. Dude. No, no matter how you cut this pie.
How'd that $2 basket repair work out for you?
Let's not talk about that, all right?
Because I'm going to throw you under the bus with that.
It's not the same. Welder. It's not the same.
Daniel, I mean, we're bringing up an interesting question. $100 an hour in labor, new sourced parts. How much could you build one of these for? Using a truck you already have.
And it's got to be the same quality that they're putting out, which means you got to deal with all the cancer that your trucks have and everything else. I'm not saying these are Concours square bodies, but these are nice trucks.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying they're not.
I'm going to take my square body to the Concours d'Elegance.
I haven't sat down and thought about what it would be, but I know for the Duramax swap I'm doing on my one, as of right now, parts wise, I've got the powertrain and everything. I'm into it for probably about $6,000 for parts. And then body work, when that truck's said and done, I'm probably going to be maybe another $2,000 into it body work wise.
What are you talking about? I can't get a paint job on a 20-year-old Volkswagen for $2,000. What are you talking about?
That's $2,000 in Bondo.
Yeah, I was going to say, what are you talking about?
No, because see, that's the thing. All I have is, I think, one floor pan I need to weld in on the truck that I'm going for that, because the rest of that truck isn't rusted out. So that one's good to go on that.
Oh, he says with such confidence.
And with where did that motor come from?
Jazz's.
Well, that's not a new motor. That's not purchased from Jag.
It's not a crate motor from Summit Racing or whatever.
No, but okay. So for a crate motor for the LMM, you can get a crate motor for those for, I've seen them as cheap as about $12,000.
Okay. $12,000 is a lot of money.
We're already five figures. We're five figures in. We're starting there.
Yeah. I mean,
breathe in with the good, out with the bad, right?
But I mean, I agree. The price is too high for a square body, but I can see how they got there.
100%. If you look at all of these resto mods, whether it's the Singers, the Ferraris, the Astons that are being converted to EVs, when they throw these six-figure price tags out there, $150,000, I'm not saying it's a number to sneeze at, but it's a realistic number because there's thousands of man hours involved in taking a vehicle that old and bringing it to this level with all new parts.
And you also factor in a lot of these companies that are doing it, speaking of, just like the resto shows that you watch, the prices they throw out there are high, but they have a lot of overhead and everything for the cost of the business as well. It's incorporated into that price.
Dude, they already got you beat. They can do a full car in like a 45-minute episode. What the hell are you? What have you been doing this whole
time? Daniel doesn't have any overhead though.
100%. He's got zero overhead. Yep.
I don't have that high speed lapse cameras yet. You gonna get them and record me?
I don't know that people want to see that.
No, nobody wants to see that. But there's another car that people do want to see. And I think Tanya wants to talk about this. Who's designing their own car to add to the bespoke pile of cars now?
Let's skip it. This is the Will I Am BS that happened like 10 years ago. Just throw this article away. Don't even talk about it. Let's move on. What's the next article we're talking about?
You don't want to talk about Kanye?
No. I'm going to let you finish, but Beyonce deserved that award.
Kanye West is designing a foam. Yes, I said foam. Concept car. We'll just leave it at that. Move on, because there's no other details other than this is being made by people who know how to make Nike shoes.
It's a Yeezy. He's making a Yeezy car.
It looks like a Play School Playmobil, but when I read foam car, I immediately went, "Oh, Demolition Man."
Murder, death, kill. Murder, death, kill.
The race car kid bed is what I see.
I thought it was one of those things you put in a cup of water and then it expands.
Oh, I remember those. Yeah.
You guys, it's called the Mark Summers. It's sponsored by Nickelodeon. It's going to come on neon orange and green and it shoots gack at you.
Gack.
Someone showed him a foam model of a car and he thought it was dumb. And that's why I started marketing.
You know what it really is? It's
a cry for help.
I'm a musical genius. I can make a car too.
Is it the safety car?
It's rich people doing rich people things.
Just like this bejeweled Lamborghini that sold for an amount that I don't understand. It reads $7.5 million or $73 million. Again, like that other article we read about the XPeng, the information is wildly all over the place and exaggerated. But all I know is that it's a gold-plated Lamborghini, reminiscent of the gold DeLoreans from back in the day. I don't know who bought it or who wanted it or who commissioned it, but
the best celebrity design car, hands down, was when Homer Simpson designed his dream car.
Yes. Yes.
Yay! That truly was a landmark achievement in automobile product planning.
Whoever bought the Lamborghini was definitely Saudi, because they're the ones with money right now.
I agree with that. Now, talking about rich people doing rich people things, there's another car that came across my desk that I was suddenly intrigued about. And I mentioned the brand when we were doing the trivia section. John Warner IV owned a De Tomaso Pantera. We haven't heard about De Tomaso in quite a long time, right? The last one that came out, it got transferred to Cuvale, and they had the Mangusta came back and all this kind of thing. And then the name just sort of disappeared, but it lingers. And then suddenly, they introduced something known as the P72. And I look at this, and immediately I think the Glickenhaus LMP2 car, or LMP1 car, depending on, you know, how you look at things. I'm baffled, and I'm intrigued, and I salivate, and then I just go, why? I can't not look at this thing. I am completely captivated by this car. It is so retro, and yet so modern, all at the same time. I think it's absolutely amazing, except for those doors.
I love it. Sign me up.
I mean, why not?
I mean, do you think there's a place for De Tomaso in this world? It's a brand that's been gone for so long.
Like DeLorean?
Because like three people are going to buy it. So,
well, 90% of the time, the doors are going to be shut. So what are you worried about, Eric?
I got a thing about weird doors.
These doors are better than the DeLorean doors, the Alpha 20.
Here's the real question. Would you be excited if Kanye West said he designed it?
I think I'd be scared. I'd be scared. Well, it's time to move on to Tanya's favorite section. We need to migrate south to talk about our favorite.
Florida man. We're actually going around the world to all the different Florida men across the globe.
You can take the man out of Florida, but you can't take the Florida out of the man.
And that is very true. I think this first one has you on to talk about as we start our journey in Europe.
Yes, in Spain, there was an Irish bloke driving his Porsche 911, you know, cruising, you know, nice, slow Sunday drive. He happened to be going 177 miles an hour.
Is that all?
Yeah, in a 75 mile an hour zone.
Basically, the Spanish people put him in jail.
Yeah, I mean, they're very strict over there.
I mean, how did they catch him? They're all driving Seat Leones that are like 1.6 liter diesels.
It's amazing.
It was Steve Wade in his Apache helicopter called.
Oh, really?
That's who was actually like monitoring this from the video. Did you not watch the video?
Oh, it's amazing.
How they catch him is amazing. So they've got him like on helicopter. They're chasing him. And then you see him, he slows down. He starts passing some cars at what seemed maybe a more normal speed. Then they pan back out and there's just like this sea of like concrete. And you're like, where is he driving? So he rolls up to like 20 gates of a toll plaza and he's like the only car there. And then a police car comes, like this little Seat, and just like blocks him in the toll booth. So that is how he is caught.
And Spanish law is very, very severe. Anything 80 kilometers an hour over the posted speed limit can come with a large fine, revocation of your license for up to 4 years, and even jail time. It's very much like Southern Virginia when it comes to their speeding laws.
Southern Virginia? You mean just Virginia?
Well, Northern Virginia, there's a lot of idiots driving fast. You could come out of D.C. and everything, and the cops are a little more lenient. But if you're in down south Virginia, you're going to jail with Buford.
I have a correction to that, Brad. In Northern Virginia, there's a lot of people driving 10 miles under speed limit in the passing lane.
And then you've got people in the right lane going 150 miles an hour. So it balances out.
Usually in a BMW, but you know, we'll leave that where it is.
Or an Audi, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So you brought up the guy in Spain doing 170, whatever, but you left out the idiot on Maryland's own Autobahn, Route 10. The police recently did a speeding enforcement activity involving an air unit. And they caught a Ford Mustang doing 169 on Route 10.
It was after Cars and Coffee, so we all expected. That's not really news anymore, is it there, Mike?
It was a Monday.
Again, you know, who knows? It was holiday Monday, Cars and Coffee. Just saying.
Well, it took him till Monday to get the car started.
The news is he didn't do a burnout, taking off out of there and hit people.
That's 1,000%. That is good news.
Breaking right news.
There. Breaking news.
So now we'll go cross the pond and we'll go down to the swamp. So it's been a while since we've had the Florida man on a lawnmower story. But yet again, we have Florida man tries to flee deputies on a riding lawnmower.
Oh, this is high quality.
Have these people not figured out that the top speed of a riding lawnmower is like 27? Why?
But this is a zero turn. He's got the maneuverability.
That is an autocross capable piece of lawn equipment right there. Yes.
So he could have had them because they were pursuing on foot.
Have you guys not seen the racing lawnmowers?
Oh my God. I've seen them at 75, 80. I've definitely.
They did finally get him by use of taser.
So they didn't use a peat maneuver on foot?
Wait. How do you peat maneuver a riding lawnmower when you're on foot? Are you kicking the back tires like with your shoe? I mean, how does that work?
It's a football tackle.
Oh, okay. I got you.
You'll have to check out the Steve Jessup. He's got a skit one where he's on a ride mower and gets tased for riding down the road while drinking.
I'm glad you added the while drinking because that makes it make more sense.
Let's say the full body tackle maneuver we call the Johnny Utah.
Johnny Utah.
The people who've seen Point Break get it.
Oh, yeah, I get it. We're picking up what you're putting down.
We're going to jump back over the pond again, this time go to England, where I'm not really sure I understand this article. British drivers are apparently furious over this nonsense aircon rule that can land them 5,000 pound fines. So aircon, air conditioner. So apparently they can be, I don't know how, but they can be fined if their car is not properly ventilated in warm weather.
What?
I'm lost as to whether they're getting fined for running the air condition or not running the air condition in their car.
My guess is running the air conditioner.
Doubt anyone would ever be taken to court for not running the aircon under this ventilation law, as somewhere in the chain, there must be someone who understands this, but someone will pay this fine. They're getting a fine for not using air condition in their car?
I'm only speaking from when I lived there close to 20 years ago, but air conditioning in a car was a rare thing in England because the temperatures don't get that high during the summer. So
104 right now.
Maybe it doesn't apply to me.
It's a very confusing. I loved one person who commented, a rule thought up by an ignoramus idiot.
But you know what? I have an ignoramus ninth grade solution to this, which is to cover my car in stickers that say Lucas. And that way I get a free pass and saying that it's busted anyway, I can't use it.
So who is the Florida man in this article? It's not the British drivers. I think it's the British government.
It's whoever created that rule.
Yes, that ignoramus.
All right, so now we're going to hop back over. We're going to go to Michigan.
More PT Cruiser terrorists?
Well, I don't know what his car is anymore.
Dodge Stratus jumping over a bridge?
This is very close. It might be that same person, ladies and gentlemen. Okay, so you need to click the at MSP West MI Twitter to watch the full video from the dash cam of the officer that was merging onto the highway as this person, I don't know what vehicle, apparently flew by him at what is alleged to be 90 miles an hour in a 60 mile an hour work zone. And he lost control and shot off the road up in Dukes of freaking Hazard. Like, you see him shoot in the air and then like go down into like some ditch. Lose control, my ass. Dude wasn't paying attention. Watch the video. He just drives straight off. There was no confusion that the lanes in the construction zone like disappeared. No, MF-er didn't turn his steering wheel.
My guess is it was Tesla autopilot.
I think it was like that guy who wrecked that GT40 who was only doing 20 miles an hour in first gear. You remember him down in Florida and on the golf course? Yeah. I think this story and that story are also very similar.
It's a boo and you just see the tail lights. It's good. It's good. Hopefully he wasn't hurt. Hopefully he wasn't hurt. But, you know, we haven't had a Wisconsin man before.
Wisconsin.
I heard the cheese is really good there. It's the cheesiest.
It's pretty hot too.
Gas prices are high. Times are tough. He was in his own garage. I don't know. He was siphoning gas. How do y'all siphon gas? I mean, this article tells you to just go to your local AutoZone and buy the gas siphoning apparatus for cheap. But if you can't do that, don't do what this guy did. Use your wet dry vac and blow up your garage.
What are you? I mean, I thought you were going to say he drank like a liter of gasoline because he's really an alcoholic, you know, by doing it the old fashioned way.
Nope. I don't know which wet dry vac it was, but it ended with burning down his garage and part of his home, maybe.
Can a wet dry vac create that much compression in the chamber to ignite the fuel?
The spark.
Yeah.
The spark for the fumes as it's going in.
Yeah, sag electricity and everything. Yeah. Don't do it, kids.
Tanya, did you see the most interesting bit at the end of this article?
Which was that? Do tell.
Wisconsin suffers 1.3 more fire deaths per thousand than the national average.
Asterix, as a result of fondue pots melting cheese. I mean,
I mean, when you're blowing up your garage.
I kind of want to see this in action. Like, I need a Bill Nye the Science Guy or Mythbusters on can you blow up your house with a wet dry vac sucking up gasoline, because I'm sure there's somebody out there who has spilled gas in their garage and went, I got an idea, I'm gonna vacuum it up. So,
Eric, just, you did that, you did it, didn't you?
My Dyson didn't explode. That's all I'm saying. It is a good vacuum cleaner. Dyson guarantees it will never lose suction. That's all I'm saying.
Someone did say, did make a YouTube video, shot back and spilled gas. Will it explode?
Kids at home, don't try this.
It's TikTok trend.
There will be a TikTok of this.
It's going to look like a Mentos, where you throw it in a Diet Coke. It's just, end of story. Mushroom cloud.
It'll be that person's last TikTok.
We will round out Florida Man with another Florida Man. And best. This is another one we haven't seen in a while. Naked Florida man climbs onto big rig throwing highway into chaos. And there's a close-up shot of naked man. She didn't need to see.
It's a lot of naked man.
But apparently, the highway was moving at the time. It wasn't, stop traffic. So somehow he was able to get onto a big rig. Don't know the details, but...
Is this the same guy that reenacted the Indiana Jones thing? Remember? And he was also naked, hanging from the front of a Peterbilt. This was in season one of the drive-thru. This is not the first time I've heard you tell this story about Florida, naked people, and big rigs going down the highway.
He's trying to get on a Mad Max Fury Road style. He's just swinging on a little pole or something.
He's swinging. On top of his
semi. Luckily, they burned it out.
Did he board said moving vehicle clothed in disrobe while on it? Or was he in the buff while boarding? Because that's brave.
I think he was in the buff. And it's one of those tractor trailers that it's got the low. It's not it has the box on it. So just had the bed that was super low.
Flat bed.
Probably carrying a bulldozer or something like one of those kinds. So he could probably theoretically have ran and jumped on it. Okay. It's also raining in the photo. So no, there weren't clothes.
So shrinkage.
Ran. What, are these people in Florida like the Flash? We have the police chasing lawnmowers on foot and drop kicking them. And now we got guys running alongside of big rigs naked. I mean, what the hell is going on down there?
Meth.
Look, people jog, okay?
It's hot down there. It's, maybe the clothing would have made them run slower.
God bless Florida. God bless Florida. He's not fully naked though. He still got his socks on.
Yeah. So he doesn't burn his feet.
Oh God, Florida man, never change. Never change.
The unidentified nudist executed his dash and mount amid driving rain and moving cars.
I wish they wouldn't use the word mount.
It was moist out.
It was very moist.
Does he get a citation for not using air condition?
Has he mounted big rig?
It's time we go behind the pit wall and quickly talk about motorsports news. So what's hot in the Formula One open wheel world there, Brad and Tanya?
Well, you skipped over the NASCAR news. And just to touch on that for a hot second, apparently NASCAR is going to be running a street track in downtown Chicago. Boom. Next.
Okay, I'm going to tune in.
There is a new series coming to Hulu about F1 racing and stuff. Something else Eric will never watch.
100%.
Daniel Ricciardo has been pegged as one of the executive producers. Hopefully he makes it not cheesy or overly dramatic or fake. I have an issue with how they talk about his racing prowess. He's not Ayrton Senna or Lewis Hamilton or Michael Schumacher. He's only won 8 races in F1, people. He's not like a champion or anything like that. So whatever. It's the same thing as like if Kevin Magnussen was doing this, whatever. But yeah, there's an F1 show coming out. Eric won't watch it. We'll have to tell you how it is.
But you know what I honed in on, Brad?
No.
Where it says Danny Rick and Hulu teaming up for scripted F1 TV show. And immediately I said, well, Netflix already has Drive to Survive. What the hell is this? Right? It doesn't make any sense at all.
You know, it's going to be a comedy like that show that was on Netflix about the NASCAR season that they canceled after one season. The one with Kevin James in it. I can't remember what it was called, but it was actually pretty good.
Yeah. That wasn't a bad show.
No, it was a pretty good show. They just dropped it.
But there's also another docuseries Eric might watch. This one is being led, I guess, development by Keanu Reeves.
Greatest person of all time.
Wants to develop a docuseries around Ross Brawn and Brawn GP.
Who?
Apparently they were two-time champions, Brawn GP, Formula One.
Again, who? I mean, you lost me at Keanu Reeves because he's going to be like, I know Kung Fu. I mean, I get it. He's like into bikes and all this other kind of stuff. I'm happy there's another Hollywood celebrity that is into cars. If you tell me, yeah, okay, we're doing another Peter Brock film or we're going to do something about Hurley Haywood or whatever, fine. But this, whatever. Okay, I'll watch it. It's kind of sort of up there with my attention span of like The Lady and the Dale and some of the other stuff. I'll get around to it when I get around to it.
It's actually pretty interesting. So Honda pulled out of F1 back in 2008, but there was a team that they had that they just decided we're not going to fund. So the principal of the team bought it from Honda for £1. He renamed it Brawn GP. It was Ross Brawn. And then they had Jenson Button and Rubens Barrichello driving, and they won the 2009 season in 2010.
Oh, so this is the rich energy car. Now I'm interested. I got it.
There's also going to be an Enzo Ferrari TV series coming to Apple Plus.
After Ford versus Ferrari, I think we're due for an Enzo Ferrari movie or something. I know that's been talked about for quite some time. I'm wondering who they're going to cast to play Enzo. I know there's been some things that have been floating around. I think we mentioned it on some previous episodes. So I'm curious to see where that ends up. But I want to know, any drama in the F1 world, did Mick Schumacher blow up another car again? Or, you know, the Ferraris actually finishing a race? What's going on?
So, yeah, Carlos Sainz, his car broke. So he did not finish the race, the last race that they had, which was, that was the Red Bull Ring, I think.
Austria,
yeah. Charles Leclerc won, but he was having pedal issues. So he was literally pulling the accelerator pedal back up with his foot to get it to set and then putting it down and pulling it up.
It was still staying engaged like 30% or something.
Oh, yeah. It wouldn't come back. So he would push it down and it wouldn't come back. So he had to manually force it to come. So he did that the last few laps of the race, still managed to beat Verstappen. And then Lewis Hamilton got a podium. He came in third.
Again.
Yep. He's making his comeback, people.
Right there with Danny Rick. As we move on to sports car racing and prototype racing, Ferrari, the new LMDH prototype for the Le Mans 2023 race, the spy photos have been leaked. And I tell you what, it kind of looks like every other Ferrari right now, but this triple rear wing and the front airfoil and everything. I mean, and I know it's hard to discern from the camouflage that they're using, but I'm excited that this car actually exists. I mean, we heard Ferrari made their bid for 2023, but nobody's heard or seen anything until now. We've seen the Cadillac, we've seen the Porsche, we've seen a bunch of other cars like the Peugeot and 9X8 and things like that. But now Ferrari has said, here it is, although we can't discern what it is. We know what color it will eventually be, but I'm excited about this. I'm excited to see Ferrari back on the big stage with everybody else for next season.
It looks like a prehistoric catfish.
There is something very Cro-Magnon about the new Ferrari, that is for sure. But again, I'm excited. I'm glad there's more manufacturers coming to the table for next year. I'm really, really looking forward to that.
And why is that, Eric?
Because I'm going to be in France with my friends, and I'm going to be there live to watch it. So if anybody's going to be there, give us a shout out, let us know. But I'm really, really excited to be there for the 100th anniversary of Le Mans. And you know what? 10 years from now, there'll be the 100th running of Le Mans as well. So there'll be another 100th to celebrate.
Oh, snap. Congratulations.
Thank you. All right, on to some quick local news as we wrap up the show here. I just want to remind all of our listeners, if you've been under a rock and you're a GTM member, we introduced something new this month. We've been working really, really hard on something we call the Clubhouse. All sorts of updated functionality that you already loved. Some of our features like where you at, lap time leaderboards, discounts, and more, they are all now designed to work on your mobile device, your phone or your tablet, 100%. Something that the main GTM site was really, really lacking as it kind of stands as a digital magazine, right? So the new Clubhouse designed for GTM members with lots of new stuff coming in the next couple of months. So be on the lookout for that. And if you haven't logged on, check out club.gtmotorsports.org. And before we get into upcoming events, which Brad likes to tell us about for next month, I want to talk about an event that happened this month, Snakes on the Mountain, where I went up and met with Mike Kuchavik from Havoc Performance, along with Andrew Bank. I got to drive Andrew's Viper, as did Brad, and I wanted to get his take on what the Viper was like.
Not only did I get to drive his Viper, I also got to drive his C8. So it was a win-win day for me that day. But there are a couple things. I was uncomfortable. The one word I can use to describe it was uncomfortable. One, it was too tiny, like too tight inside both the C8 and the Viper. I was uncomfortable because it wasn't my car. I was uncomfortable because I didn't know the roads we were on. There are a lot of things that were going on that just made me uncomfortable. But one thing that came to mind after driving both cars is Danny Glover in Lethal Weapon 2 constantly saying, "I'm too old for this shit." I'm walking away from those two cars, and the Viper was amazingly fast. It was brutal. It shook you. It vibrated the whole time, and you burn your leg when you get out of it. It's an animal. And then the C8 was like driving a Camry. Of course, Andrew tells me it's because I was driving it like a Camry. When I say I'm too old for this shit, I think I've reached the peak and I'm starting to come down from my desire to want ultra fast cars. I think I'm not interested anymore in going any faster than the car that I have can go now. I don't want to do it on the street. I'm not interested in doing it on a racetrack, really, because I just don't have that drive or desire anymore. And part of it could be because I have, you know, a kid now. Part of it could be because I'm just getting older and I can see my own mortality. My mind is shifting from super fast cars to more luxurious, comfortable cruisers in a sense.
Brad's all grown up now. He's ready for a Buick.
No, but I am ready for like a Lexus SC500 or something like
that. I haven't driven the C8 yet. I still want a coach in a C8. I think that's what's going to sell me on it is everybody says how good it is. I know we talked about the C8 on this show for almost an entire year about all its defects and its issues and does Brad fit? That's always the big question. I'm really surprised you fit in the Viper, because if you're uncomfortable, I don't know how uncomfortable you were, because I was uncomfortable in the Viper and I'm not nearly as tall as you are to get inside that thing. That cockpit is tiny. I will say the driving experience, there is one word to describe it. I've coached in Vipers. Driving is very different. It's visceral, right? It is just so raw, but also it's the laziest, fastest engine you've ever had propel you down the road. You look at this speedometer, you're doing 90 miles an hour and it's doing like 1200 RPM. Like it could care less that you're doing that kind of speed, and it's the snap of a finger and you're doing a 140. It still doesn't care at all. The sound is, I love it. You know, people say, oh, it just moans like a dying cow and stuff like that. But there's just something about the Viper, and that's not my favorite generation either, but I spent about 3.5 hours behind the wheel of Andrew's Viper. So I got a lot of time with it in traffic, on roads, you know, different conditions and stuff like that. Would I throw it out of bed for making crumbs? Absolutely not. Like if somebody gave me one, I would drive it wholeheartedly. To your point, I'm not going to seek one out the same way I would maybe some other cars. I'm still holding out for a Gen 1 because I still kind of want that, but it's not at the top of my list anymore after spending time with it. That being said, my favorite sort of offshoot Viper, the Defender from the NBC TV series Viper, I got some new news on that. Somebody actually reached out to us through our media channels and said, hey guys, you got something wrong in your article. I'm actually friends with one of the designers and some people at Chrysler, and sent us a bunch of pictures and a small editorial. And I posted that up on our website. So if you want to check out some really behind the scenes pictures of the Viper Defender being designed and built at Chrysler and not in Hollywood. We have those up on the website right now. So I thought that was really cool and I wanted to share that with everybody. So I found it coincidental that we both got to experience Vipers this month. And then suddenly this article pops out at the same time, which is pretty cool.
And you know, the most important part of that whole thing you just said there was, you were wrong.
You're welcome.
Ding, ding, ding.
You were wrong. Say it with me. Everybody say it with me. Eric was wrong. Eric was wrong. Eric was wrong.
Yeah.
Let that sink in for a minute.
Something never drive your heroes.
Yeah, exactly. Something never drive your heroes. And you know what, Brad? You get one pass every couple of years. And since it's our anniversary episode, I'll let you have it.
How about that? It's our anniversary and I don't have flash.
But what we do have is upcoming local events.
That's true. And these are brought to us by CollectorCarGuide.net, the ultimate reference for car enthusiasts. So let's see what's coming up for August. We've got the BMW Car Club of America Autocross Test and Tune number 2 on August 6th at Summit Point. The Polish Mountain Hill Climb is also on August 6th and 7th in Flintstone, Maryland. PCA Potomac Region is hosting the Dead Presidents Drive and Dine Tour on August 12th through the 14th. The Pasadena Concourse honors Ferrari's 75th anniversary and kicks off Car Week in Monterey on August 11th. VAG Fair 2022 will be held on August 13th, 14th at the York County Fairgrounds in PA. Our friends at the IMRRC are hosting their awards dinner for 2022 on August 19th in Watkins Glen. PCA Potomac Region is hosting Jets and Lighthouses 2022 on August 27th, which looks to be an interesting cruise through the Pax River area in Maryland. Also, a little side note is we will be at Watkins Glen watching the GT America series and SRO. It's a wonderful touring car series, all kinds of fun racing going on. Anybody that's going to be in the area, please go check it out. Tons more events like this, and all their details are available over at collectorcarguide.net.
Now it's time for the HPDJunkie.com trackside report. So what's coming up? I want to give a shout out to the folks over at Project Motoring, both John Cafisi and Dave Gilbert, for supporting the July EMRA event at NJMP. And thanks to all the GTM instructors who came out to help. We definitely need more help from instructors out there. We have 3 remaining events for EMRA on the schedule. Summit Point at Shenandoah on August 20th and 21st. They've switched out New York Safety Track in September for Pocono North on September 17th. In addition to that, there's the season finale at Lime Rock on October 15th. So if you have extra time to help us come out and instruct, please contact me at crewchief@gtmotorsports.org for more information on how you can help. I also want to give a shout out to Sam Harrington and Mike Peptone for their efforts at this SCCA runoffs at NJMP this month as well. Congratulations to them. You know, they're always duking it out in those formula classes. It always looks like a lot of fun. And we're very fortunate that they post a lot of their videos up on our YouTube channel. So you can always check those out on the Grand Touring Motorsports YouTube page. Our friends at Auto Interest had to unfortunately cancel their 4-day Summit Point summer camp. We're not sure if they're going to be adding another event to their schedule to make up or replace for it, or what the future of the summer camp looks like for 2023, but there are events with EMRA and HOD and other organizations throughout August at Summit Point if you're looking to make up for that date. Not only that, our friend and GTMer Steve Furman has migrated south and taken over the Southeast and Florida region of Hooked on Driving, and he has 3 events coming up in August at Roebling Road, Carolina Motorsports Park, and Sebring. And then he's also added events at BIR and Atlanta Motorsports Park later in the fall. If you're down in that area and you want to hook up with Hooked on Driving, you know, Steve's in charge down there. He's a great guy. He's also going to be looking for instructors and as much help as he can get. And we wish Steve the best of luck with his new retirement gig. So if you're looking for a new track day, be sure to check out hookedondriving.com for all the information down in the Southeast in Florida. Speaking of Hooked on Driving, their fall finale is always at Watkins Glen. It's a 3-day event in October. Sadly, some of us are going to be missing that because that's the same weekend as the EMRA Lime Rock time trial. But we are looking forward to meeting up and working with a future Break Fix guest, Torsten Gross, from the Just Hands Racing Foundation while we're up at Lime Rock. So stay tuned for more details on that in the coming weeks. And for those of you not joining us on site at Watkins Glen with SRO, as Brad mentioned, be sure to keep in mind that you can catch all of the Grand Touring and Touring Car Racing via at GT World on YouTube. And there are 4 SRO events left on the schedule after Watkins Glen. That's Memphis, Road America, Sebring, and Indianapolis. So you can learn more about that on gtamerica.us.
And in case you missed out, check out the other podcast episodes that aired this month. Since 2007, Don Weberg has been bringing you the best in garages and collections. Are you hearing about Garage Style magazine for the first time? Then it's time to learn all about the garage lifestyle. Collectibles, automobilia, insights into other people's garages, and tips on how to lay out and design your own space. All available through GSM. Because after all, what doesn't belong in your garage? And congrats to GSM on the launch of their new website, garagestylemagazine.com. We had a bonus episode this month, which was also our introduction into the world of Concours, when Rick Barnett from the Concours at Pasadena visited us to educate us on the latest and hottest new show that kicks off Monterey Car Week for the 4th year in a row. If you're wondering what's the difference between a car show and a Concours, tune into this episode to find out. What exactly is a touring car? And how can you get involved in one of the best and affordable classes of professional racing? Jim Jordan from SRO answers those questions and more. We get an exclusive tour of the Volo Auto Museum with Jim Wydilla, a living and constantly changing museum tucked away 40 minutes outside of Chicago. Be sure to check out our Patreon for an exclusive behind-the-scenes video tour of the Volo Museum. Scott Harmon, founder of Track Shaker, is devoted to helping drivers experience new and exhilarating adventures with their cars through grassroots motorsports. Learn how Track Shaker can help you get on track. Thank you to all the guests that came on the show this month and to our in-studio audience for being here with us on this special anniversary episode. As you can tell from the trivia questions, there's lots of great golden nuggets hidden in every episode. So be sure to tune in to the over 130 episodes we have available and get caught up on Break Fix.
All right, no new Patreons for July, so big want moment there. So if you want to see us get through years 3, 4, and 5, be sure to sign up today on patreon.com/GT Motorsports. Every dollar counts to help keep the lights on and keep us fed with, what is it? Fig Newtons, gummy bears, and monster.
And occasionally goldfish.
According to Mike.
And we've got some other shout outs. We've got anniversaries. Kerwin Webb and Michael Bowser are celebrating 6 years with GTM. And Latin Lad Steve Wade from several Breakfix episodes is celebrating 5 years.
Remember, for everything that we talked about on this episode and more, be sure to check out the follow-on article and show notes available at gtmotorsports.org.
We'd like to give a special thanks to not our guest host this month, but our in-house audience that had partake in the discussions and everything that we had. They were in studio, quote unquote, with us. Thank you all for hanging out during this live-ish recording. We look forward to more guest hosts in later episodes. And if you would like to be a part of the conversation, hit us up. And of course, we'd like to give thanks to our co-host, executive producer, and overall BAMF, Tanya. You're welcome.
We also want to thank all the sponsors of Break Fix, our friends at Garage Riot, HPDJunkie.com, Collector Car Guide, Garage Style Magazine, Hooked on Driving, Project Motoring, AmericanMuscle.com, and all of our loyal Patreon subscribers, as well as all the members, the families, and the friends who support GTM. As Brad would say, because without you, none of this would be possible. So thank you all for the last 2 years, and we look forward to many, many more.
Happy anniversary!
Yay!
Happy anniversary!
You know the best part? This took just as long as it normally does.
Yeah.
I still can't get over the fact that PMX, the X stands for nothing. I just think of the commercials. Leave off the X for nothing.
I totally forgot. You guys, did you guys know that you guys have an anniversary stone?
Wait, what?
I just learned about this literally yesterday because I work now with a jewelry maker. One of the amazing artists I get to work with at my new job. There is a new gemstone on the market called Fordite, also known as Motor Garnets. It is dried automotive paint that they scrape off the floor at the manufacturing facilities, polish up, and sell as jewelry.
Nice.
My dad joke there was going to be, is it blue topaz? As in the mercury topaz. Never mind.
I thought the second year anniversary was diamonds. I don't see any diamonds on my finger.
It's a road diamonds or whatever. It's just a broken windshield.
Perfect.
Yeah, Detroit diamonds.
I have one of those.
Detroit diamonds, that's it.
Thanks, guys.
Happy anniversary. Happy anniversary. Happy, 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 happy anniversary.
Well, here we are in the drive-through line. Me and her. Cars in front of us, cars in back of us, all just waiting to order. There's some idiot in a Volvo with his brights on behind me. I lean out the window and scream, hey, what you trying to do, blind me? My wife says maybe we should park.
If you like what you've heard and want to learn more about GTM, be sure to check us out on www.gtmotorsports.org. You can also find us on Instagram at Grand Touring Motorsports. Also, if you want to get involved or have suggestions for future shows, you can call or text us at 202-630-1770 or send us an email at crewchief@gtmotorsports.org. We'd love to hear from you.
Hey, everybody. Crew Chief Eric here. We really hope you enjoyed this episode of Break Fix, and we wanted to remind you that GTM remains a no annual fees organization. And our goal is to continue to bring you quality episodes like this one at no charge. As a loyal listener, please consider subscribing to our Patreon for bonus and behind-the-scenes content, extra goodies, and GTM swag. For as little as $2.50 a month, you can keep our developers, writers, editors, casters, and other volunteers fed on their strict diet of Fig Newtons, gummy bears, and Monster. Consider signing up for Patreon today at www.patreon.com/GT Motorsports. And remember, without fans, supporters, and members like you, none of this would be possible.